You're listening to the Outpost Podcast with Dr. Ray Mitch. Well, greetings, everybody. Welcome and greetings from the bustling metropolis of Sedalia, Colorado. Actually, more of a hole in the wall, but that's okay. It's a one railroad town, and if you blink, you'll miss it. There isn't even a stoplight in the town. So here we are. This is day two, and you're listening to the Outpost Podcast. I'm Dr. Ray Mitch. And, you know, the thing that I would kind of point out, if you're listening for the very first time, I'm talking about a silent retreat. And people, the minute I say that, people have automatically stereotypes that, even though they've had no experience at all with a silent retreat, sometimes there are people that say, I could never do that. That's silence. I don't want silence. We won't get into that right now. Or any number of reactions to it. And so what I've been doing here, and I started it last October in the last retreat, and I'm continuing it on in this spring one, is to kind of pull back the veil and give you an opportunity to see what the backstories are here of a silent retreat like this. And a couple kind of introductory things that I would say. One is the way we do it is very, very different than most of the traditions, particularly within the Catholic Church. Of course, we're here at a Jesuit retreat house. And most of the time, the spiritual direction and the time spent is very much alone with God, not with any other people. And as I began to develop this, I've been doing this now for 14 years. My very first group of students that came with me was four, and they whether or not they're listening, they know who they are. And so one of the things I discovered about this particular generation is how connected they are, even though it's whether or not you would agree with it being connected, or to what degree it would be connected, it still is that way. They have grown up in the context of social media, and so they are always in a context of whatever sort that might be. So what I introduced as we started these silent retreats at CCU was to have this kind of group community experience at the end of each day. And what was really pretty remarkable about it is how much people would teach one another without really intending to. And they would tell their stories of what the day was like and what their interactions with God were like. And maybe there wasn't anything at all. And they would learn. They would learn almost unintentionally from one another's story. And that's what I have begun to realize is so powerful about these weekends, is the opportunity to share one story about the interaction or even the encounter with God through other people as well as individually, and being able to learn and to listen and all the things that really are connected to it. So the interesting thing about this is that I think my generation, and I'm a late boomer, but I think my generation would rather have an isolation or a solo thing rather than a connected thing, because of some of the assumptions we make, or the challenges we face in being vulnerable with those kinds of things, all the things that we would think of as far as other people and what they will assume and what they think and the conclusions they make about my spiritual journey, and et cetera, et cetera. That's really all very much a part of it. But it's very different doing it this way. And yet, we now have to put feet to our words about the importance of community and living life together, living spiritual life together specifically. And so that's been a lot of this that it has morphed into this context, and it has been remarkably powerful. Because oftentimes I'll say to my students, you're not coming to this retreat to be taught by somebody. You're coming to this retreat to learn from God. And that really is what this is all about. And we always have these intermediaries in our experiences, our spiritual experiences, like teachers and mentors and other people like that. And we really don't connect up with God directly. Like, I can sit with him directly and have this conversation or pour out my heart before him in all of these things. And that really is what a silent retreat offers. It's kind of a slice or a window in time that I can sit in and interact with God during that time in a way perhaps I've never done before. And it can be jarring. I'm not going to be I don't think I have to sugarcoat it here. It can be really jarring, partly because of our expectations. And those things always fight against us when you come to something like this. Is my expectation is that something dramatic will happen, or God will speak, or certain things will happen, or whatever. And one of the biggest challenges, I think, of going through a retreat like this is letting loose of those things, letting go of those things, and letting God dictate the agenda rather than us dictate the agenda to him and he fit into that. And that's unknown. It's out of our control. And we really don't really like that lack of control about what the outcome is. And one of the things that I would comment on, and I talk about this ultimately a lot, I shouldn't say ultimately, but a lot at CCU, is we've got the person, we've got the process, which is what this is, a process, and then we have the product. And we tend to spend all of our time thinking about what the product will be, what it will be in the end, what will come out of it, what kind of action steps we need to take. And we think very, very little about the process. And the process is where the relationship actually lives. And we have this propensity for taking that for granted, which is unfortunate because we don't do it that well. Quite honestly, we just don't do it that well. So all of that just as a setup going into what I'm talking about tonight, and that is day two. And day one, we talked about all of the distorted images and expectations and things that the retreatants had. And now, last night, we had another conversation, and there was so much of it that centered around a word that everybody loves to hate, but feels like they should love. And that word is trust. And the action point, because trust is kind of passive, right? I mean, how do I just trust? I mean, what is there to that? And what does that actually look like? And we don't, I mean, the best we can get to is like a trust fall, if you've ever done one of those. And that's trust, right? We're depending on people catching us, and we are completely vulnerable and completely at their what? Mercy for it to catch us or just to let us fall. And people won't do that, but we're not so sure. So trust is actually a very active thing, but our tendency is, okay, I choose to trust, then what? Well, maybe it's not that simple. I know it's not that simple. And the action step takes us into, if you're looking for that, it takes us into acceptance. And we hate acceptance. I'll just be bluntly honest. We hate acceptance. Because again, it seems like it's saying whatever happened is okay. Or if I accept somebody, then I'm condoning their behavior, or any number of things. And acceptance has nothing to do with condoning the motivations of a behavior. Acceptance has everything to do with living in reality as it is, not as I would have it to be. And that's acceptance. Now, it dawned on me today as I've thought about this conversation we had last night that maybe the more accurate description of acceptance is non-rejection. Because essentially what we do is we take the behaviors, the things that we don't approve of, that we hate, that always we're always running aground with, we take all of that and we fundamentally reject it. Because we think by rejecting it, then we will change it. And rarely does that happen. And it never really occurs to us that maybe non-rejection, otherwise known as acceptance, non-rejection is the path to actually finding the power of grace to change. And that's a hard turn to make for a lot of us, myself included. I'm no different. The stuff I'm saying is saying it in a mirror. And that's the journey of our, the essence of our journey with God is the journey of trust and acceptance. Because fundamentally, we are called to trust God enough to believe and to trust that he loves us as we are, not as we should be. Because of course, what we should be will never be, really. So there's that. There's also this issue of living in a world that doesn't exist, otherwise known as the future. So we always make our choices about what we're doing right now in accordance with what it could be in the future, which means ultimately I live in a place where nothing is changing other than what I dictate it to be. Versus the present, and living in the present with people, with myself, with the challenges I face, and I almost use the word trust, and embracing the realities of where I am right now. That does not mean that I will never change. But I can't change what I refuse to accept. I can't. Because acceptance means the embrace of what fully is right now. And that's true in our relationship with God. That is true in our relationship with others. That's true in our relationship with ourselves, is that if we will not, we're afraid that if we accept it, it will never change. We will never accept it, and we will never change. That's really how that lays out. And whether that's people and the choices that they're making, if I accept them, if I embrace them as people, not their behavior, but I embrace them as people, then I'm condoning the choices and the lifestyle and all the other things that they're doing. And Jesus did not do that. Jesus accepted people as they were. And he knew it better than even they did, probably. But he accepted people as they were. That provided the basis then on the changes that could occur. I mean, think about it. If you go into the ER and you broke your leg, you can't use your leg, and the doctor says, you're fine. You just twisted your ankle or you twisted your knee or whatever. So he's not going to accept the fact that we have a broken leg. How much can he actually help us? If he says to himself or she says to herself, if I accept it, then it means that I am supporting and encouraging and condoning all that led up to this broken limb, then what ends up happening? Well, nothing, right? I mean, nothing changes. And I think that's the description of our Christian life, is we are so bent on rejecting what we are doing and how we are and the feelings that we struggle with or the attractions we have or whatever that might be. If we're not going to accept it as it is, then we have no hope. And I don't think I'm overstating that. We have no hope of any change. I don't care whether God's part of that picture or not. He is not going to hijack our choices. We still have choices to make. And then if I choose to say, okay, all right, I'm going to accept it the way it is. I'm going to accept the struggles I have in whatever the area is, whether that's an addiction or a relationship or whatever it might be. I'm going to accept it the way it is. Now what? Well, if I'm going to accept it the way it is, then I bring my heart and my values and everything in alignment to what Jesus is calling me to be and do. If I bring that into alignment, it's no easier. But over time, that alignment will start showing in a lot of other areas in my life. And just remember, we will always frame things in a way that we are comfortable with, not in a way that it is. And that same thing is true with a lot of what we talked about last night in terms of trust and acceptance. And I think I'm probably going to bring up the whole non-rejection thing because we're fundamentally opposed to the idea of acceptance when it really comes right down to it. And so that's what last night was. Now, think about what the progression is, because the night before, it was all these distorted images of God and everything else. And now, last night, it was, do I trust him or not? And the really very revealing thing is going to be what the conversation tonight is going to be like. And sometimes it's not a lot of change. It's just little kind of splinters that are poked in to this, what we think is a watertight case about how we're living life. And we're uncomfortable with anybody kind of getting in there and fussing around and changing it around and doing things with it. And that's, I think in a lot of ways, that's actually the Holy Spirit's strategy. It isn't to beat us over the head and shoulders with a 2x4. It's just to put a little splinter in there that creates enough space for us to maybe choose differently one time. One time. That's all that really matters. And that's a beginning. And when we choose one time, we can look back at that time and say, I chose differently there. Maybe this time I can choose differently this time. And that's what this journey is. See, understand, silence is not just silence. Silence creates a space for us to be able to look and see with a new set of eyes. That's what silence accomplishes. And that's also why we end up being blind most of the time and asleep in the outside world. Because suddenly it screeches to a halt, the windows are opened, and I start seeing a vista that I never really thought about before. And it can snap shut. I've seen it happen so many times. Even with myself, it has snapped shut. But with repeated exposure to it, it seems like there are minute movements of the heart toward what God is calling us to know and do and understand and feel. And then suddenly we look back and it's a little different than we expected. And that's really the opportunity that exists. I'm not saying the purpose, but it is the opportunity that exists in a silent retreat like this. And it's remarkable that we have 20-somethings doing this, and a lot of times I don't have 50 somethings or 40 somethings beating down my door to talk about this or to do this, because it's so outside the range of our ability to control, guess what? Outcomes, not process, because we're not talking about process here. We're talking about how will it look once I do it, not what, how I will be changed when I engage it. And that's a big part of it. So that's day two. That gives you a little bit of a bird's eye view of what it was like. It's been, like I said, it's been a windstorm out there and a lot cooler, so there are a lot less people outside that to be able to sit and talk. And even if I were to drag this whole gear out, you wouldn't be able to hear me because of all the wind, certainly within the trees. So thanks for your patience at me being confined to the indoor spaces here. Tomorrow I will release one more. It will be a overview and conclusion of what the retreat has been. And then I turn my attention back to the spiritual journey. Just understand something is that a silent retreat is a very, very important part of the spiritual journey. We talked a couple of weeks ago in the Outpost podcast. We talked about the wall and the experiences people have in the wall. And in a lot of cases, that's exactly what this is that actually is an intentional choice into moving into a wall type of experience, because it tears apart all the things that we have gotten comfortable kind of propping our faith up with and challenges us into a direct relationship with God. And that's really what it's all about. That's what is our gyroscope for living in a balanced and a passionate life. And you get an opportunity, like I said, to be able to look behind the veil and see what's going on in these silent retreats. I don't have interviews for you. I could do it, but given the state of affairs, even in my own heart, this is about probably as good as I can pull it off. So, anyway, that's the report for today. Thanks so much for joining me. You're listening to the Outpost Podcast. I'm Dr. Ray Mitch, your host. Digital home is sgi-net.org. You'll find all the resources, all the information about the silent retreat there. I will be able to nail down the dates for next year, next week sometime. So keep your eye peeled on that. If you hit the website, you can join the community. We're not going to send you kind of extraneous material. There will be a newsletter coming out here soon. So we're trying to do that on more or less of a monthly basis. And as always, this is a drumbeat that is really hard for me to say, because we can't exist without your partnership and your donations to support what we're trying to do here. Because it is not cheap. It is only getting more expensive. It has changed in cost considerably since I started. And that's just cost of running a retreat house like this, and managing people coming to it and all that kind of jazz. So if you feel so inclined to partner with us, we would be ever so grateful. All of your gifts are tax deductible and donations. If you go to the website, you can hit the donate button. There's a place there for you to donate, whether it's a continuing gift, which is great because it certainly helps us to build up the scholarship fund, and also just to operate this nonprofit. Or if you'd rather send it to us physically, you certainly can do that. Just address your envelope to SGI, SGI, and the PO box is 322. What is it? I just blanked. It is Le East Lake, Colorado, 80614. So you're welcome to do that too, if you'd rather do that. We would be ever so grateful. So Next time, I'll be back on the backside of this retreat, giving you some updates about what it was like and what has come of it. And then we will continue on with the series that I've been doing on the spiritual journey at that point in time. So until then, love ya. Later. Bye.